over to the master of ceremonies and the controller of the light switch.
Okay, the Buddha's words on loving kindness. This is what should be done
by one who is skilled in goodness and knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Thank you. So we had a false start for those who came a little bit later. We did have a little bit of a discussion. So we'll have a change of tack. So recollect the benefits of listening to Dharma, which you can perhaps hear something that you haven't heard before, or you may have a clearer understanding of something that you had heard before. And listening to Dharma helps remove doubt and improves understanding. And most of all, if you listen to Dharma properly, then it lets your heart be clear and joyful. And a clear and joyful heart is the best receptacle for Dharma. So, who am I? What is my purpose in life? These are philosophical questions that beings have asked since the dawn of time. Not everybody asks these questions. But certainly philosophers have, and indeed many followers of various religions have asked this very similar questions, wanting to know, what is the purpose of being born into this life? And some people think that they have to align their life with some divine gospel, that there is some omnipotent figure that created the world, and the purpose, their purpose in life are to abide by this omnipotent being's will. I always had a problem with this when I was growing up. I could never work out why, if there was an omnipotent being who was responsible for everyone in this world being born, why would such a being create such a disparity between human beings? Why were some born to abject poverty? Why were some born disabled, sick from the very start? Why was the playing field so uneven for all these different... After all, we're all human beings, but all of us had a different start. If such a being were master of the universe, then why would he not make everybody, give everybody the same chance? Never work that out. This, of course, is not a Buddhist perspective, but the Buddha did actually make comment on this. There's one sutta where he talks about how different beliefs are started. And this particular belief is referred to as being the partial eternal belief. And the Lord Buddha said that upon the dissolution of the world order, and there will come a time when the world as we know it won't exist, where world order will be challenged, where what it's in cosmology they would refer it as a contracting period, where there are no humans, there is no earth, and the myth of the destruction is that it will all be burnt up in great fire. And at that time many beings will be in heavenly realms. And what the Lord Buddha said, that at this time of contracting, which would last for thousands, well, millions, billions of years, time from a Buddhist cosmology is almost incomprehensible. The number of lifetimes people have had, the number of aeons, and I've said before that one aeon, Mahakapa, is, there are several analogies for it. Basically, the simplest one is if you had a cube of gold, 2 kilometers long, 2 kilometers wide, and 2 kilometers high, and every 100 years, a being came along and rubbed that gold with a silk cloth just once, then that gold will be eroded away, that cube of gold will be eroded away before one aeon is completed. That's mind-boggling. And some beings live for multiple aeons in heavenly realms, or higher realms, however you want to put it. And in this time of contraction, which will last for a long time, with beings in various realms, but there comes a time when beings that are in these heavenly realms, and one of them, their karma that enables, that sustains them in that realm is finished, and they're born into a new realm, the realm of Brahma, the lowest of the rupa, the form, realms of form. And in that realm, you don't get born in the same way, you just appear. There's no birth process, there's no egg, no sperm, no contraception. You simply appear. Beings appear in that realm when their karma is such that they can sustain themselves in that realm. So this being dropped from the next level up, in the Buddhist realms of cosmology, and was the only being in that realm. And that being stayed in that realm for a very long time. So much so that they couldn't remember where they were before. But after a while, after a very long while, they thought to themselves, wouldn't it be nice to have a companion? And just at that very point in time that this being, all alone in a Brahma realm, thought to themselves, wouldn't it be nice to have a companion? Just at that very same time, another being whose karma had been exhausted at a higher realm was reborn into this Brahma realm. And the being that was there first thought, I thought to myself, I need a companion, and look, lo and behold, puff, someone has appeared. So I must have created them. The other being looked at the one that was there first and said, oh, where was I? What's happened? This being was here before me, so therefore it must be my creator. And this process went on. The first being thought, oh, I'd like some more companions. And then, as it turned out, the karma of more and more beings was such that it was drawn to the Brahma realm. And all the new beings thought the first one there was their creator. And this went on for a while. And then after a while, the karma of some of those beings was such that they couldn't be sustained in the Brahma realm, and they were reborn as humans. And some of them became ascetics and practiced meditation. And some of them were able to remember their last life, but only their last life. And so they saw that there was a creator in their previous existence, and they were part of that creation. And so these ascetics then taught others and got others to believe that there is a creator, a divinity which is all-powerful. And so the followers of these ascetics then set up new religions. And they taught that the purpose of the followers was to align themselves with the wish, the will of the Creator. And that's the story as it's explained by the Buddha as to how those kinds of religions were established. And it explains why many people who follow such views believe that their purpose in life is to follow the divine. From a Buddhist perspective, there is no me, there is no I. So when I say, who am I? From a Buddhist perspective, we look at what our body and mind is made of. The body is made of elements. The mind is made of mental faculties like feeling and recollection and thought and consciousness. And when we examine these, we can't find anything that's permanent. We can't see a soul. We can't see something that's there, that's always been there and always will be there. We see the earth element turn to dust when we die. The water element goes back to the ground. The air element. The fire element. Just go about doing their own thing. They coalesce for a short period of time, and we call it this body, and we don't even have the same elements from the time that we're born to the time that we die. They keep refreshing. And yet, we think of there being a self. But from a Buddhist perspective, the impermanence that's caught up in this process means there is no self. There is nothing permanent. It's just a set of causes and conditions that coalesce for a period of time and then disband, go their own way. We have no control over them. The Lord Buddha said, well, look, there are lots of different views. And indeed, in another sutta, he travelled to the land of the Kala Lamas. And his reputation went before him. And the people in that place, in the town, the main town of the Kalama people, where the Lord Buddha went to reside, they'd heard about him, and they'd heard that he was an arahant, that he was enlightened, and that he was the best trainer of those who can be tamed. And he taught men and he taught bells. So he became famous. His reputation went before him. So a whole group of them came to listen to him speak. And they sat down beside him and said, and I'll paraphrase because I'm terrible at actually quoting verbatim. So this is my take on the whole thing. And they said to him, look, loads of ascetics come this way. They all tell us that they've got the answer, but they contradict each other. One says this, someone else says that, and we don't know which is good or bad. We don't know right from wrong. All that we have is doubt. And the Lord Buddha said, well, you're rightful to be doubtful. You should be doubtful. You should question. Don't take something as being true simply because it's an ideology. Don't think something is true simply because it's been handed down from generation to generation. Don't think something's true just because intellectually it seems okay. Don't think something is true just because there are some scriptures which say that it's true. Don't think something's true just because you have a teacher that goes out and says, this is the truth. He said, examine things for yourself. So from a Buddhist perspective, we don't have blind faith. Yes, we have faith in things like karma, because we can't see karma. But that faith is replaced by wisdom if we practice. What we had faith in at one stage, we eventually come to know if we practice all the time and if we get to the end of the path. Gradually along the path, more and more will be revealed. And the more it's revealed, the more you know and the less that you need to have faith. So he said, okay, well, look at what happens here. If a person is greedy, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And everyone agreed that was a bad thing. Because greed can cause people to kill one another, to steal, to exhibit sexual misconduct, to get intoxicated. So it causes people to be to lose their virtue. They said, well, what about anger? Is it good to be angry? And they said, no, it's not good to be angry. And is it good to be deluded? Is it good to be to misunderstand and misrepresent the way of the world? And then he contrasted that with all the good qualities of giving, of wishing people well. And they said, are these good qualities worth developing? And everyone said, yes, they are. And so the Lord Buddha said, well, investigate for yourself. Those things which are good, those things which a wise person would approve of, they're the things you should be doing. They're the practices that you should be maintaining. And that should be your standard. That should be the way that you look at things. Is this something which is good and wholesome? Is this something that a wise man would approve of? Or is this something which is unwholesome, which is bad for me, bad for society, and something that a wise man would not approve of? Then if you use this as your yardstick, then you don't need to follow a divinity. You don't need to look for a meaning outside of your own actions, outside of your own thoughts, your own speech. What you need to do is to guard against unwholesome actions by having mindfulness watch over your heart as you experience things in life, so that your actions by body, speech, and thought are all wholesome. That's the crux of Buddhism. To develop wholesome qualities, to maintain the wholesome qualities that you've got, to remove the unwholesome qualities that are deep in your heart, and to stop more unwholesome qualities from developing. If you apply those four kinds of effort throughout your life, then you'll be practicing Buddhism. Then your life will have meaning. Because the results of practicing in that way will be good karma. And good karma is worth more than any coin, any fortune, worth more than any object. And so I've asked the question of, who am I? What is my purpose in life? Well, from a Buddhist perspective, as I said, there is no I, there is no me. But there is a process in the way that we respond to our external world. We see things with the eye. We hear things with the ear. We experience sensory stimuli. And if we react to them in a wholesome way, then that gives purpose and directs karma. And it leads to the removal of the illusion that there is a self, that there is a soul within this body-mind complex. But that knowledge will only arise if we practice properly with those four kinds of effort. If we don't practice, then the meaning of our life is no different to what it's been for countless lifetimes before. And that will draw us to the path of suffering. It will keep us on the path of suffering. If we practice those four kinds of right effort, then it will lead us to freedom from suffering. And that's what the Lord Buddha taught. And that should be our goal. And that should be our purpose. And when we can practice that and understand that, then we can help others along the way. That's enough for me. Here, one. Sitting meditation now. So, pick your meditation subject. But first, I want to do something a little different. I'd like everybody to just spend the first 5 minutes practicing loving kindness. In particular, there are people who come along to this meditation group who may not be here tonight for various circumstances. So I think we should just practice some loving kindness towards them. May they be happy. May they be free from suffering. You don't have to know their names, but may all beings in this room be happy. May all beings be free from suffering. May all the regular members of this group be happy. May they be free from suffering. Just spend a little time sharing the merit that we make today. Whatever merit we make for practicing this meditation, may our friends share it too, even though they may not be here. May they share the merit. May they be happy. Turn your attention to your own meditation subject. bear in mind that we have a meditation subject for three reasons. One is to develop mindfulness. Second is to develop concentration. Third is to develop wisdom. So as you practice, if your mind becomes distracted, that means your mindfulness has lapsed. Don't get concerned about that. Simply note that your mindfulness has lapsed and bring your attention back to your meditation subject. The longer that you can sustain mindfulness focused on your subject, the better your concentration becomes. With concentration comes mental power, and you can use that to develop wisdom. But for the time being, just develop your mindfulness and improve your concentration. ignore that. Just come round in your own time. Just feel the happiness and the tranquility which you've developed in your meditation. No rush. Just breathe easy. Feel relaxed. Are there any questions?
Yes. What's the use of improving yourself as in, and then not sort of demonstrating it, if you like, to society, as in, you know, like you're improving all your good qualities and getting rid of all your bad qualities.
Yeah.
How do you show compassion? You should just. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You lead by example.
Sorry?
You lead by example.
Well, that's right. I mean.
Yeah, but if you spend all your time improving yourself, you haven't got time to leave by yourself.
Well, that depends on how hard you practice. Because if you're practicing all the time, then hopefully you get to a stage where you can put your foot on the path and you become a stream enterer. When you get to that stage, then you've got something to tell, you've got a story to tell. Until you get to that stage, really, you're just the practitioner. You might be a little bit further ahead than everybody else, but if you haven't got that grasp of Dharma yourself, you can't pass it on to other people. Mm-hmm. So you can lead by example in the sense that if you're a layperson, there's a big difference between being a monk and being a layperson. If you're a layperson, you live in society. You have a family. You have a job, generally, unless you're old like me and retired. And so you can be an example, because you can't be sitting in meditation all that time. You've got to go out and earn a living. You've got family responsibilities. You've got the upkeep of a house or whatever it may be. You have things which distract you. So you can't spend all your time practicing. But when you do practice, and even when you're going through your normal daily life, you can have mindfulness. And you can develop good qualities and try and catch yourself when you're being angry. Try and catch yourself when you're being greedy or you have lust arise or whatever it may be. Try and catch yourself so you can say, no, I'm going to abandon that form of practice and I'm going to come over and I'm going to develop goodwill to all people. I'm going to develop compassion. I'm going to try and develop some wisdom. And then you will be an example to those people who are around you. You don't have to sit or go and become a teacher or start a new Buddhist sect or whatever it is to pass on your knowledge. But you will be an example to those people around you. And they'll see that you do good things. You do things that wise men would approve of. And people will see that you're making some sort of effort. They might not want to join you. They might not be convinced that that's right for them. But nevertheless, people will see that you're becoming, you are, or you're becoming a good person.
Yeah.
And so you set an example in that way. And if you take the life of a monk who's practicing a lot of meditation all the time, well, they're practicing to become enlightened. They're practicing to become, then, when they become a teacher, or when they become knowledgeable, they can become a teacher. The Lord Buddha, he didn't teach until after he was enlightened. He didn't say, well, I'm really good at practicing jhana, and I've mastered those, and I'm really better than all the teachers that have taught me so far. He didn't then go out and say, no, I'm going to stop practicing myself now because I've got so far, I'm going to teach others. He purified himself first and then took that knowledge and taught it to the rest of us. And so we're no different. In this day and age, if we want to be an example to others, then we have to practice ourselves, and we can only teach others to the level that we've gone ourselves. We can't teach beyond that. And for most people, that would be a very high percentage, we haven't gotten that far. And so if you're not careful, what you can end up with is the blind leading the blind. People who don't know much about meditation teaching others who know even less. And that's a problem, because meditation, as I said to you before, last week or the week before, and I was talking about all those monks that committed suicide because they learned part of about a super meditation, but they hadn't learned to live with it. So meditation can actually be a difficult subject. It can actually cause mental anguish and angst if it's not practiced properly. That's why it's always good to have a good teacher who's been there before you and knows the path at least a few steps ahead of you.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question? Good. Any more? Okay, it's over to the Master of Ceremonies again, so Bill could lead us in the sharing of merit, dedication of merit.
Manifest strength, the vessel of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life, may they soon attain the threefoldness and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Sadhu.